Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, I guess if anyone had to sit through the president's press conference yesterday, in addition to the press, and listen to his petulant haranguing of congressional Republicans, who he seems to think control both chambers of Congress, not just one, but, small detail there, at least we have the satisfaction of knowing that even the Associated Press has basically cried foul on most of the claims that he's made, and some pretty substantial ones too, including the fact that he always claims that the provisions of his Jobs Act are issues that have always been embraced in a bipartisan fashion. Well, turns out that's not the case. Turns out a lot of his other policies, including his position on Chinese currency, not exactly what he said either. And so you throw all that in with the story of the teacher, which he embellished apparently a whole lot more than the reality was, and not only are his poll numbers tanking, not only does he look like a whiner, but he's not even close to telling the truth.
Yeah, there are a couple things that kind of jumped out about yesterday. We're used to throwing things at our television when we hear Obama speak, and say, oh, come on, you cannot be serious, as John McEnroe would famously berate the refs. And so it's good to see that folks who are not conservatives and who do not view Obama as inherently skeptically as we do, seeing the same thing. And I think what we're seeing is a president who just says whatever he wants things to be, whether or not that is actually the case. I believe he said every economist has said that his plan would work. Really? Every last one of them? You can't find anyone in the entire country? One of the ones that jumped out at me, and I don't think the fact checkers really jumped onto, and I just mentioned a bit on Campaign Spot earlier this morning, is that Obama pretty much asserted that if we pass the jobs plan, it will be a barrier or a kind of a buffer against bad news in Europe. The short version of that assessment is no. Because if you think about it in the sense of, okay, the euro collapses, the European economies are really in the dumpster, well, they won't be buying as much U.S. products. That's one very true assessment of it. And I suppose if the government is borrowing and spending another $450 billion, would that alleviate it some? Yeah, I guess a little bit. But the really bigger factor is that if that happens in Europe, all of these French and German and all, Belgian and all these different countries have a lot of white collar workers who will be forced to work a heck of a lot cheaper because their currencies will be a heck of a lot cheaper. In effect, American labor would get a lot more expensive on the global market. So as a result of that, the Obama jobs plan wouldn't do anything about that. And so that would where the real hit would come. And somebody was saying, it was an interesting analysis. Somebody said, don't feel bad for Europe. In these, as it teeters on the brink of economic collapse, because if things really get south there, they will end up taking American jobs. And it means, this means you, Mr. White Collar employee working somewhere in America. In light of that, Obama just seems oblivious to some of these looming threats to the American economy out there. And so on the one hand, I'm really glad that AP and various other fact checkers are pointing out the president is just seeing the world as he wants it to be instead of the way it is. Having said that, I have yet to see these fact checkers really having a big impact on political discourse. I know one of the groups, PolitiFact or whatever, got the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago. These fact checkers mean nothing to shameless politicians. And as time goes by, it becomes clear that Obama is a spectacularly shameless politician in terms of asserting things that just flat out aren't true.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't really read the fact checks. They actually have other things to do in their daily lives. We get paid to look at these things. But hopefully they can see the obvious desperation in his voice, the fact that he keeps droning on and on and on, not only saying things that are untrue, but basically trying to filibuster so he gets as few questions in as possible. And it's interesting that even the Associated Press is onto him now as far as not even being remotely close to being on target on a lot of these issues. And his dodge on some of the scandal issues like Solyndra and Fast and Furious were also pretty pathetic yesterday. And you mentioned the independent economist that he kept citing, show me the Republican plan and let's see what these independent economists that love my plan love their plan. Well, first of all, if they love your plan, I'm pretty sure they're not independent. So I'm guessing they're probably not going to like the Republican plan of lower taxes and less regulation. Just a small hunch there. On to martini number two now. Jim, you wouldn't know it by listening to the mainstream media this morning. When I tuned my radio to the local news station today at 8:30 to hear what the latest jobs numbers were, it was, whoa, the economist predicted 65,000 new jobs this month. They were way off. It was 103,000. Woohoo for the month of September. Of course, they didn't mention that 45,000 of those were simply Verizon workers who had gone on strike and, lo and behold, came back to work. So that puts us down under 60,000. Maybe those were factored in, so we can still say it's slightly above expectations. Overall unemployment still at 9.1. White House's own projections suggesting it's probably going to get worse than that, not better, before Election Day. So, yay, America, 100,000 new jobs in a market where we need 300,000 at least just to tread water.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the real underlying point. I don't think we on the right should overstate how bad it is. I mean, this is not the worst possible jobs report, and I think it's safe to say that at least based on this, we aren't in recession yet. But having said that, the good news is we haven't gotten worse from the very bad situation that we're in. Another word for that is stagnation, which is, you know, and the other thing, the more interesting factor there, because you often will hear people referring to the number of unemployed is 14 million, which is, you know, a huge amount. But once you throw it, the U6 number is the one that some people say is more significant. And this includes discouraged workers, people who basically have given up looking. That's about 1 million of those. And then you get to the people who are working part-time when they want to work full-time. And that's a number that's actually really starting to, I think, be a significant indicator and starting to creep up there. And that's at 9.3 million, which is almost as many people who are out of work. So put all of those together, and you're really looking at closer to 28 million Americans who are either unemployed or have given up or are underemployed, who are not in the employment situation that they want to be in. That's a heck of a lot of people. A lot of worker people who do have jobs know somebody like this. Perhaps they're supporting a spouse. Perhaps there's a family member who's affected. The idea that we should, you know, that perhaps on the lowest end of what we have to do to keep up with population growth, which is about 100,000, once, you know, you throw in the Verizon workers, which I think most people would count as not really being a job created, we may have hit that bottom level. It says something that people are treating this as if it's really good news. I think the best you can say is that this is not worsening news. You know, there's an old saying of been down so long feels like up to me. Yeah. I suppose when you've been through enough economic hard times, the faintest glimmer of not getting worse is greeted with hosannas and hurrahs. I mean, I think it's probably a sad state of affairs in America if that's what the policy of this administration and this long, really 3 to 4 year recession have driven us to.
Sad to think that if we just passed higher taxes on millionaires and billionaires, Jim, we would clearly be able to put at least 25 million of those people back to work, if not more. Just kidding. The president's not promising that, but he is promising millions, I think, at least 1 or 2 million if this $500 million boondoggle goes through.
By the way, I just want to point out one of my favorite readers, Number Cruncher. He likes to look at, you know, various things, you know, statistics put out by the administration. He noted that if the government seized every dollar that millionaires make after $1 million, do you know how long that tax revenue could keep the government going?
How long?
About 2.8 days.
Wow.
Not even a long weekend. And that's assuming no change in economic behavior, that the millionaires don't flee to other countries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it just is an example of just how, I believe the total was something like $27 billion or something like that, which is just to give you this sense of the scale of the problem and the extraordinarily small amount that really could be raised by raising taxes on rich people.
On to martini number three now. And Jim, you know, you've got these so many different words. Dan Foster used Trustafarians a couple days ago to describe the people protesting at Wall Street and these other protests around the country against, I don't know, corporate greed, people who make money. I'm not really sure what they hate. All they want to make sure is that rich people aren't rich anymore and maybe that they want it. Turns out now that these protests, which they keep insisting are nonviolent, aren't entirely nonviolent. There's been a number of skirmishes with police, and of course, the liberal outlets are blaming the cops for instigating fights with protesters because that's what police do, apparently. Now the big story from New York, at least, and who knows from these other cities, is all these people sleeping in the park, massive sanitation problem because these people, surprise, surprise, well, they're just going wherever they are. And I think, you know, without using too strong of language, it's a perfect metaphor for exactly what's going on here. It's a completely manufactured mess from Van Jones and all these other people, and basically what they're arguing is a bunch of BS.
You know, Greg, I kind of tuned out when I was on the road to this story. I just kind of was like, it just sounded to me like the same old, same as the anti-Bush protests, same as the anti-war protests, same as the anti-WTO protests. Sounds like all the same, you know, malcontents and smelly hippies and stuff like that. But having said that, now that I'm watching this, I'm intrigued in the light of the death threats that have been sent to various New York lawmakers. And I'm kind of glad I don't live in Manhattan. I'm just waiting for this to go south. And I don't mean in terms of geographic direction. I just think this will get worse. I just think there's enough people out there who, I think one of the things that's driven by this, look, this is all, as you said, Trustafarians, these young white college students who've all gotten liberal arts degrees and suddenly find themselves not employable at a level to pay back their student loans and pay for the lifestyle they've grown accustomed to. Remember, all these folks in 2008 were on the hope and change bandwagon. I think a good portion of the anger you're seeing there is this sense of, wait a minute, they thought they fixed the world by putting the munificent sun god in the Oval Office, and nirvana has not dawned, other than cropping up in the statements of John Huntsman. So there's a lot of this disappointment, I think, is there. A lot of this anger is there, and they're trying to lash out at somebody. And there's some folks in the crowd who seem upset with Obama, but I think it's generally, rich people, we don't have our stuff. We don't have the lifestyle we want to have because of rich people. And so I'm just waiting for this to get worse and for this to turn into a less peaceful protest. And if and when that happens, Greg, I don't know about you, but I'll be very eager to say to everyone in America outside of this group, you know, Americans, take a good look. This is what happens when you get a community organizer as a president. Because as harsh as that may sound, Barack Obama has fanned the flames of this and basically blaming millionaires and billionaires. He is more than happy to play the populist rabble-rouser if he thinks it will help his political fortunes. I think it's worth noting that since he's adopted this this approach, his numbers have actually been sinking. It's not really working the way it's supposed to for him. I just think in the end, it's ultimately who he is and what he knows. And when in doubt, he goes to these Alinsky tactics of finding a scapegoat and just demonizing the heck out of him. And right now it's Wall Street. I think this will end somewhat ugly, but in a way, I think the good news is that most Americans, well, this may put this, drive a stake into the heart of populist demagoguery, that Americans will realize that it doesn't really work. It just kind of is cathartic and maybe makes you feel good briefly, but does nothing to really create economic growth.
Obama knows two things. He's good at two things. One is speaking. We're clearly tired of that. And he's basically, as we found out earlier in our conversation, not even close to telling the truth anymore. And the only other thing he knows how to do is agitate. So this is the plan B. And if it doesn't work, I think he's going to be the one that takes the brunt of it. And I don't really see how it can work because clearly still a majority of the people are not going to be in favor of this, I have to think. It's going to be ugly on the way in, but we'll hopefully see a brighter side on the way out. So
happy Friday, everybody. Can't wait for that weekend.
Absolutely. Well, at least it will be nice weather. Jim, have a great weekend.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us next week for the next 3 Martini Lunch.